This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Schools will see a boost in education funding days before they open their classrooms. We tell you how much money districts will get. Plus, state election officials are asking lawmakers for more money to pay staff and to keep up with growing demands, why the effort is likely to face hurdles, and what you can expect from President Joe Biden's visit to Wisconsin. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 2nd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to start with Governor Tony Evers using the federal pot of money, COVID relief money, to distribute more money to schools. And this comes at a time right before schools are about to open their doors. So what he did is he's going to use $90 million in federal COVID money and kind of bolster K through 12 schools. And it's about $100 increase per student. 75 of that is going to help retain, attract teachers, because we know there's this teacher shortage going on, among other issues that may be caused by inflation. Another $15 million would be directed towards mental health services. Shortly after this announcement, Evers' opponent, Tim Michels' spokeswoman, Anna Kelly, just basically said, you know, there's no amount of federal money that can paper over Governor Evers' record of denying parents' rights, refusing to reopen schools, kind of the same talking points that he has blamed Evers for the COVID shutdowns of schools. Let's first just take a listen to Governor Evers' kind of pitch to voters here about him talking about this COVID funding.
Over the last decade, Republicans have cut more than $4 billion from the education budgets I proposed as governor and state superintendent. That's $4 billion with a B, folks. And we've seen the negative consequences of those decisions play out year after year. I saw what was happening in our schools 4 years ago, and I decided to do something about it. Education changed my life. It's part of my DNA as a born and raised Wisconsinite, and it's why I'm damn proud to be called the education governor today. I'm investing $90 million into our K through 12 education across our state to make sure our kids can bring their best selves to school every day, while also assisting our schools to have the resources they need to do what's best for our kids.
So this comes in addition that Governor Evers used COVID relief funding here. So, you know, sure, some schools like it, but there's also some other schools that say, I talked to specifically Madison District, say, they don't want to use that on teacher salaries because once that funding runs out, and you can use it up until 2026, you know, how do you adjust salaries like that? But it is money that schools can use regardless.
Yeah, so Evers did $110 million in December of last year. He did the $15 million in early this year as part of the mental health stuff. This pot has $15 million on top of that, $15 million for mental health, and the $75 million to expend on whatever you want to. Evers is making the pitch that Republicans didn't invest state money into K-12 in this budget. He's trying to backfill that. Republicans have long argued that, look, you can't look at education funding in a vacuum. Yes, we didn't put a whole lot of state money in, but it's because there's so much federal money flowing into schools. The challenge is going to be, how does Evers, if reelected, how does he convince lawmakers to invest a significant amount of state money into education in the next biennium? Republicans aren't going to, no matter who the governor is, not going to just put nothing in, but we're talking a $5 billion plus dollar pot of money right now. There'll be other demands on spending in the next biennium as a surplus. So you could do a tax cut and fund schools and fund UW, and there's a lot of money out there.
Yeah.
But if you want to do what some Republicans want to do, which is do away with the income tax, period, it takes a lot of money to cushion the blow of that initially. I don't know that Republicans are ready to go that far in mass, but they are talking about going to a flat tax. Well, if you go to a flat tax, there are also going to be some issues. How is that going to be resolved? Where are the funding going to go? So a lot of question about what the money is going to be. But Evers wants to make a pitch of, I can do both investing in schools and cut your taxes. I've already done it, right? I signed all these tax cuts. They're Republican tax cuts that I put in the budget, but he signed them. I've found ways to put federal money into education when they wouldn't, so I'm the guy who can cut taxes and fund education ahead of the election.
It's going to be a messaging that we're going to continue to hear until November. Speaking of money, the Wisconsin Elections Commission submitted, or I guess approved their budget request for lawmakers that they won't consider for a long time now. Let's get through the November. But what they're asking for is $1.3 million to hire 10 staff members to help the public get a better understanding of how elections work and respond more quickly to public record requests and complaints. Now, this is basically what Megan Wolf said is a big push, a big ask, but they have been tasked with a lot more over the years because of the complaints and public records and just the criticism in general over how elections are run. And all of this criticism is right after the 2020 election. A lot of Republicans unhappy that Donald Trump didn't win and have really been targeting WEC ever since. Speaking about those public record requests and those complaints, let's take a listen to Megan Wolf kind of making her pitch as to why they need this funding.
What we are proposing will ensure our staff can continue to meet the rising public need for information, which will build confidence in our election system among all Wisconsinites. Creating the Office of the Inspector General is demand and needs driven. The size and composition of the Inspector General program is based on the significantly increased volume of open records requests, voter data requests, questions, and complaints. These requests came from Wisconsin voters who deserve prompt, high-quality service from their government. Current staffing levels are inadequate to handle the post-2020 volume. The WEC must adapt to meet the growing needs of our citizenry. Funding the Elections Inspector General program would be one clear and decisive step towards creating a more effective, efficient agency that will better address citizen concerns and requests and thus increase public confidence in our elections for the long term.
So Megan right there was kind of talking about the need for this money because of the increased demand from the public when it comes to public record requests. Just to put in perspective, when WEC was created in 2016, the number of public records requests per month was about 2, and then it jumped to about 16 in 2020. Complaints against elections have also skyrocketed from about 15 a year in 2020 to more than 100. At least they're on track to reach 100 by the end of this year. Now, this is, you know, sure, great, dandy. They approved it. But now the uphill battle is getting GOP lawmakers to agree with this. And of course, JR, there's a handful of Republicans out there, including Tim Michaels, that want WEC to be completely eliminated.
Yeah, so first off, this has to be submitted to the governor. He can decide whether he wants to include it in his budget. So all agency requests are due September 15th. Once Evers gets it, he'll start compiling these agency requests. It'll be him or Tim Michaels come January, put it in their budget request to the lawmakers. They'll then deal with it. So you'll have this ask of Republicans when there are some talking about getting rid of it. Interesting thing is Don Millis, who is now the chair of the Elections Commission, appointed by Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, and talking to him, he actually took the first few weeks after he became chair, earlier in June, to brainstorm ideas with Megan Wolf, the administrator, and staff about, okay, what do we need? What's this agency need to kind of do things? And this is one of the ideas he came up with. During the hearing, Don talked about his preference was going to be to have this position, because there'd be an inspector general who'd oversee this office, this arm of the Elections Commission, would report to the commission. And he kept pitching this as my preference to make it more palatable to lawmakers, because he knows ultimately Republicans, barring a massive miracle, will control legislature come January. You have to get them on board to do something like this. Don's kind of perspective is this would help address a lot of concerns we hear from lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, about the commission, because it'd be more responsive. It'd fill requests more quickly. It could do things. This would help that dynamic. But how do you get them to invest? They don't trust the agency. Enter Janelle Branchen, who was, for now at least, the chair of the election campaign's elections committee in the Assembly. She ripped the idea. She's been at war with the commission for a while as chair of that committee, asking for information, complaining that not getting everything that she wants, as timely she wants it. Robin Voss has said he's noncommittal, I guess, would be a good way to put it, to her remaining chair much longer. She has scheduled a hearing next week to talk about the voter rolls. The backdrop of that is the agency made some changes recently. For example, if you search My Vote right now or prior to the summer, if you found a deceased voter, it would be marked a deceased voter. You could find the person's voting history. You'll no longer search and turn up deceased voters on the My Vote system because of complaints from Republicans and others that if you have dead voters on the rolls, it's ripe for fraud. Even though the commission has said over and over and over again, dead voters don't go to the poll books that are actually sent to the polling sites, right? Why am I talking about all this background? Because I'm laying out just this complex case you have to make as the Elections Commission to Republicans of we deserve more money, a significant chunk of money. Looking at their general purpose revenue budget, this is a huge increase. A significant amount of money when you're not happy with how we run the show, period.
Exactly. And speaking of elections, we want to mention that the Department of Justice formally charged Harry Waite. He was the Racine County man who requested absentee ballots on the My Vote system you're just talking about for other people, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Racine County Mayor, and several others. So he has openly admitted that he committed fraud, and now there was this investigation going on, and now we kind of just got confirmation yesterday from DOJ that he'd be charged with 2 counts of election fraud and 2 counts of basically using another person's information. Mm-hmm. So this was no surprise. When I talked to Waite, he said, I'd do again in a heartbeat. I have, you know, no concerns about what I did, and he's looking forward to his day in court to argue his case.
So, and to show you they're not messing around, these are 2 felony counts that carry, of the 4 counts, 2 are felonies that carry up to 6 years in prison each and $10,000 fine, class H felony. This is a guy who basically dared prosecutors to charge him, and then they went ahead and did it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's fascinating is you have the situation where Harry and this hot government organization keeps in his election fraud. And he committed fraud and admitted to it to prove fraud. And now he's going to go to trial, most likely, or be some plea, whatever. He's in legal trouble because he committed fraud and says he doesn't have any qualms about committing the fraud. It's very fascinating.
It is very fascinating.
approach something to trying to prove fraud.
It's something we've been reporting on for several weeks now, and it's not going to be over with quite yet. I believe he is due in court September 8th, mm-hmm. which is next initial court appearance. Speaking of elections, let's keep it going. We're going to kind of recap news that happened late Friday, is that Gabelman's subpoenas were dropped. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss withdrew those subpoenas that were seeking to jail some of the mayors and other local officials to sit down for private depositions. The Attorney General and many Democrats have long argued that they wanted those depositions to be held in public in front of the Assembly Elections Committee. That never happened. Of course, we all know Gabelman's investigation is officially over, but this is kind of another chapter of ending this election review.
Yeah, and now you have U.S. Senator Ron Johnson ripping Robin Voss for dropping the subpoenas,
right,
saying, I think I'm paraphrasing here, letting the Elections Commission give you the middle finger about what's going on and not disclosing what happened. I wasn't there for Johnson's comments or the coverage of it. The rub here is that Gabelman could have resolved this months and months and months ago by having these people testify in public in front of a committee. He wanted private depositions at his office in Brookfield. He's no longer there anymore, so what do you do? The chair of the Elections and Campaigns Committee, Janelle Branch, and again, not on good terms with Robin Voss. You don't see a path where he would turn over to her this investigation and push it forward. And Robin's answer is to Ron Johnson was, well, I also have concerns about election integrity. That's why my focus is, you know, a governor elected who's a Republican in November to sign all these bills we passed this past year that Evers vetoed to try and address these issues.
Right. And a lot of these subpoenas were also the center of lawsuits. So it's possibly taxpayers are going to save some money there now that these subpoenas are dropped.
The legal bill actually, I tallied this up last week, the tab for attorneys for the lawsuits, the 4 open records lawsuits, the Waukesha County case that Gabelman filed trying to enforce the subpoenas by jailing people, the Dane County case that AG Josh Call filed trying to prevent Gabelman from interviewing Megan Wolf in private, that tab has now exceeded the actual cost of the investigation. They're just shy of $1.3 million between those two pots of money. That doesn't count the $286,000 between attorney's fees awarded to American Oversight and the $24,000 in contempt fines issued to Gabelman. Now, that pot's going to be on appeal. We'll see what happens with that. But it's just fascinating that the legal fight has exceeded the actual cost of what Gabelman did between paying salaries, renting office space, procuring equipment, and everything else. That was like $520,000.
Yeah. Right. So. Quite a tab. Also, a victory for disabled voters this week after a federal judge ruled that they can have assistance with their absentee ballot. This has been a longstanding issue, and this is basically going against what the Supreme Court originally said. So Disability Rights and some other people signed on to this federal lawsuit asking that we want to clarify this law, because there was kind of this confusion after the state Supreme Court ruled that didn't really say, is it okay to return your ballot? It only said, the state Supreme Court ruling said, only the voter themselves can return their ballot at the clerk's office or by mail. So now that was after drop boxes were banned as well. So U.S. District Judge James Peterson basically ruled that the Federal Voting Rights Act does allow disabled voters to have someone help deposit their ballot in any way. Part of the ruling said voters shouldn't have to choose between exercising their federal rights and complying with state law. So kind of just, once again, kind of another chapter of this of who can return my ballot and where can it go.
So go back to January, Judge Bourne in Waukesha County ruled drop boxes were illegal and also ruled that only the voter could return the ballot, period. No assistance. The Supreme Court in its ruling upheld what Bourne wrote about drop boxes, but Peterson noted, while the Supreme Court said we're not going to address this issue about assistance for disabled voters, the Supreme Court didn't suspend or negate Bourne's order on that issue. It created confusion. So Peterson said basically he's eliminating that confusion by doing this and clarifying what can happen. Now, I don't know how many people this affects, but for the people it does, obviously a very big deal. So it's interesting that they're stepping in and saying, okay, I'm clarifying what you guys wouldn't do, Supreme Court, in your case, because you didn't seem to want to get into it.
Well, yeah, because even just before, you know, the primary election, too, there was so many back and forth court rulings when I was even trying to, you know, write your stories. You're trying to tell the public of what's going on, what just happened, and all these reversals. So this kind of sets the record straight for November. All right. Also this week, we're kind of just going to touch on some headlines in the U.S. Senate race, which, of course, between Senator Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes. Speaking, we'll start with Ron Johnson first. Some headlines that hit him this week was that he has a false elector working as a staffer on his campaign. And then Lieutenant Governor Barnes used 10 times the amount of security than his predecessor. And specifically note about that story was something even when he was running as lieutenant governor. So this is kind of a continuation of that story, you know, kind of uncertain how much it will impact him, but definitely two kind of negative headlines for the both of them.
So with Lieutenant Governor Barnes, so I wrote in May of 19, the increase in security costs for him the first few months of being lieutenant governor versus Rebecca Clayfish. This new take from the Journal Sentinel basically updates that, what's been going on since he took office. I've always said that, well, I love what we do in the media and the ability we have to kind of expose things, to highlight things. It only matters in a campaign if it ends up in a TV ad. It's kind of the sad truth about what we do, right? Well, Wisconsin Truth Back, which is a PAC funded largely by Diane Hendricks and Elizabeth Uline to mega GOP donors who are backing Johnson, they're up on the air. New ad started yesterday hitting Barnes for the security costs. Interesting, Johnson posted a video on Twitter this week of him pulling up in a black SUV at a golf course to say, I always drive myself around. It's an abuse of taxpayer dollars. Mandela fired back on Twitter. This showing a screenshot of a story about how Ron Johnson was using taxpayer dollars to travel between Washington, D.C. and his vacation home in Florida. So that's just kind of like, you know, the social media nitty gritty. The big thing about all this is Ron Johnson is trying to make this race in a referendum on Mandela Barnes, not on himself. Mandela, meanwhile, has a new ad up refuting these kind of charges about wanting to defund the police and abolish ICE. Let's talk about that one first. I asked people, okay, what's going on these up in the air already with this ad? And I got two theories. One, they are seeing something in polling that suggests that the tax on Mandela about the police, defund the police stuff, is moving people, and they have to respond to it. The second idea is that they knew the attack was coming. Rather than wait for numbers to move, they're trying to be preemptive about it and cut that off, okay? For Johnson, his challenge is he's not very popular. I mean, yes, the Marquette poll had Mandela Barnes up on Johnson, okay? But look at the numbers where Johnson is at. He's upside on the voters by 9 points. If you go back to 2016, he'd begun to stabilize his numbers and start to get back in the right side of things for favorable, unfavorable by late summer. October, he got in good territory, stayed okay by November. I don't get the impression talking to people that Ron Johnson is going to flip that script again in 2022. He is a two-term incumbent. He is well-known. They have spent millions of dollars to define him. he's probably not going to be able to change the perception of him as a person, even though he's trying, you know. Mm-hmm. It's easier to make it a referendum on Mandela and define Mandela, tear him down, and make him unpopular. So you come November 8th and go, well, who do I hate the least? And that's the person I'm going to vote for. And I'm being somewhat flippant saying that, but it is going to be a very negative, nasty campaign where they're tearing into Ron Johnson over things like saying he wants to make Social Security and Medicaid a discretionary part of the budget, which means every year you would review the spending on those programs. Dems say it means he wants to put on the chopping block. Johnson says, no, I want to save these programs. We should talk about their security, their funding. For Johnson, go after Barnes. Make him seem unpalatable. That's what they're trying to do right now. That's what you're seeing in these ads.
And Ron Johnson, at an event this week, also did kind of take a hit at Mandela Barnes. The past few events that I've been to, it's more of us asking about issues that he's either talked about in D.C. or what's going on here in Wisconsin. So I feel like he's kind of beginning to do that more like in front of the media, though. Of course, mm-hmm. at the campaign events, he's probably doing that, bashing his opponent now. Same with Mandela Barnes, who has been doing it, you know, for ever since he got into the race. So we've talked about this before. This is going to be probably the most heavily spent race, I think, as well, when it comes to campaign ads. And it is going to get pretty nasty. And it's what resonates with you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some people watch an ad and so, oh, wow, I really believe that. Or, let me double check that if it's your preferred candidate. You know, so it might rub you off or you might agree with it.
Polling is a snapshot in time. I always caution people to say, well, this poll said this in August. That means it's going to happen in November. I want to see the Marquette poll in September and see, is anybody moving? Because it feels like we're in an environment where people are kind of locked in already in a lot of ways. How do you move people in such a divisive environment that we have right now in this country and the state?
Right, exactly. All right, we're about to preview. President Biden is going to be in Milwaukee on Monday for Labor Day. He, of course, just comes off the heels of his address on Thursday evening, basically saying democracy is at risk. It's, you know, pointing the finger, blaming Republicans for this. Before we kind of dive into what we can expect to hear, there was also news this week, I guess the battle between does Evers want mm-hmm. President Biden to campaign for him? And this comes after a CNN report basically said that Evers' aides told the president's staff that we don't want him to campaign with him because of his low approval numbers. I don't want to be seen with him. Maybe let's wait till after the primary. This kind of all of a sudden changed. And we've also asked Evers about this before. I believe when I had an event with him in West Allis at an ice cream shop a few weeks ago, he basically said, I don't know who said that. I don't know who that aide is. That wasn't my call. And then on Monday said, I'm looking forward to it. Come on by. So let's take a listen to Evers' response.
He's the president of the United States. We have a good relationship, and so I'm looking forward to it. As far as the value campaigning with the president or not, I'll let the people of Wisconsin figure that out. But we are absolutely working to make sure that regardless of who the president is, we're focused on the issues that are important to Wisconsinites. And so that is my focus. We'll continue to do that, fixing the roads, broadband, things that I've been talking about.
As of right now, we don't know if Lieutenant Governor Barnes is going to be attending. I think Governor Evers is going to be there, and that will also say a lot. I mean, the cameras will be rolling, there'll be pictures, and likely going to be used against him.
Yeah, well, Barnes has three stops on Monday, his campaign said, including Milwaukee, but he didn't really say whether he's going to be there mm-hmm. with the president. And I asked some people this week, like, what's the difference? Mandela Barnes and Tony are going to be tagged with Joe Biden if Republicans think he's an effective hit, right? In the last two Marquette polls, Joe Biden's job approval rating was 40%. That lowest has been the Marquette poll since he took office. How do you escape the Biden shadow if you're Evers or Barnes? You can't do it. The answer that I got was, yes, that is true. However, it's the picture, it's the video that they want to shy away, or that they kind of are hesitant about because it's easier to do. You've seen a picture from, I think it was lacrosse, of both Biden and Evers having ice cream, both big ice cream fans. You're seeing that picture a lot if Republicans think it's an effective way to define Tony Evers and try and tear him down. Likewise with Barnes, I don't know that I have any pictures that I've seen of him and Biden next to each other, but you would create one, right? Now, we know TV ads, how they work. It's easy to splice two pictures together and make them side by side, but that apparently is what's holding him back. So that may be why you make that calculation. But again, if Biden's unpopular still the way he is now, come you know, late October, and there's been some polls that show them getting a little bit better. Some showed them not so much. It's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah, and this also comes as we're going to hear a lot of the messaging of Tim Michaels is already trying to tie Evers with Biden. And then on the reverse side, we're hearing Evers say, well, Tim Michaels is pals with President Trump or former President Trump because he held a rally for him right before the primary. And we've already seen Michaels kind of shy away from President Trump. He has endorsed him for 2024, even though we don't know if he's running or not. So that is something that I think will also stay in the messaging of, you know, and it will be a thing I'm looking, we'll see, like, will Evers after this event and after these pictures then kind of not really talk about Biden? It really is, I think, really going to depend on what the polls say.
And the Trump thing is fascinating because typically a former president goes away. Like, after he leaves office or loses,
Usually they
recede in the background and go to the private sector and kind of do their thing. Trump is not doing that. Because he's not doing that, it's creating a scenario where you have a midterm election that's kind of a referendum on both presidents, because Trump is driving a lot of coverage right now with what's happening with Mar-a-Lago and those documents and his comments. Biden's not very popular, but Trump is less popular. I mean, Republicans, generally speaking, would love to have the Trump base turn out enthusiastically for them come November without Trump being the picture every single day to talk about whether they agree with the stuff that's going on or what he's saying. All that kind of, it's just unlike anything I've ever seen before in politics in a midterm election.
Right. And I'm always just curious, how big is that Trump base still in Wisconsin? I think there was always that theory that when the Mar-a-Lago thing erupted, it was on primary day or the day before. I can't remember.
Day before.
So was that what got a lot of voters to vote for Tim Michaels because they knew that he was endorsed by him and they were angry by that? I who knows, right? I mean, that's what I'm always curious about is how many people are still adamant, huge Trump supporters, and that's who they just automatically vote for.
Yeah, the first Marquette poll after the primary went in the field 2 days after the first, you know, raid at Mar-a-Lago didn't show a real rally around Trump effect. His numbers really improve compared to the previous one. But give it time, see if that changes. Right. That'll be fascinating to watch. And it does it create energy for them? I mean, midterm elections are about who's energetic. Abortion, other issues are driving Democrats. We've seen it in numerous special elections where there's real energy there. What will drive Republicans in a similar way besides the unhappy Joe Biden?
And inflation was still the number top concern, according to that latest MU poll. And another one will be coming out this month that we will be sure to recap the highlights. All right, that will do it for this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week. Have a good weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.